Welcome to the Arts and Antique Radio Show, where your host, nationally recognized certified appraiser Elizabeth Stewart, Santa Barbara's treasure sleuth, will help you put a value on the treasures in your own home.
Every time it rains, pennies from heaven. Don't you know each cloud contains pennies from heaven?
So let's find out. How valuable is it?
Hello, 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 Santa Barbara. It's your chantress of everything valuable and beautiful, Elizabeth Stewart. And I am here with Greg Gorga, the director of the Maritime Museum, Emily Falk, his curator, and Thomas Van Stein, who I haven't met in person, but gosh, I've appraised a number of your paintings, Thomas. And they're beautiful and distinctive. I can always tell them across the room. This is because the museum is doing a show called Coastal Moments, plein air paintings by local Santa Barbara artists. And it's opening June 13th. And some of the artists that are represented are wonderful, wonderful community here of artists. Ann Shelton Beth, Nancy Davidson, Camille Deller, Rick Garcia, Eric Harrison, Willis Heaton, Ray Hunter, Ann Sanders, Thomas Van Stein, and Ralph Waterhouse, all wonderful painters, all best of the best. And as usual, Emily's curated a wonderful show, and I want to know how she picked her artist and how she did her walls this time, et cetera, et cetera. So Emily, tell me how you hung the show.
Well, I haven't hung the show yet. I'm taking down a show this weekend, early next week. But I have it all planned out, painting the walls early in the week. And each artist will have a bay or an area with a distinct color behind their work that complements the work. And I hope you can see, Elizabeth. It's going to be gorgeous.
Fantastic. And how did you pick your artist?
I wanted to really get a nice collection of artists from the community that are of different ages, men and women, different formal and informal training and their background. So I had met Diane and Ralph Waterhouse, and so I worked with them to select artists, of which I believe all these artists that I chose do also are represented by Waterhouse. And they were graciously allowed me to choose the artists. And like I said, I sort of picked, Diane had a little weigh-in in it, but I picked people that I thought had a great variety of ways of looking at the coast and ways of painting and styles and ways of translating the feeling of a moment. Very, very different. They could be looking at the same scene and a very different interpretation comes through. And that's what the show is really about, is, you know, standing in a moment with certain light in a given day and what happens to that artist, what comes into their mind and what they put on the paper or on the canvas. And it's just fascinating, the variety of interpretations that are in the show.
I was listening as you guys were talking before we went on the air, and I just want to introduce one of our premier artists here. And I believe that Thomas is not with us right now. Where are you, Thomas?
Well, I am with you via Zoom, but I'm actually living up in Idaho most of the year now. I bought a house up here because I couldn't afford one in Santa Barbara. So I come back. I've kept my art studio in Santa Barbara, and so I come back two or three times a year and spend a few weeks at a time and balance my life out, get back to the ocean, get back to the Santa Barbara community that I grew up with and that I still love to this day.
So tell me more about where you are. What town? What's it like? How's it different from Santa Barbara?
Well, there's a lot more. You're surrounded a lot more by country, a lot of mountains, a lot of places to hike, a lot of wildlife, and we live right near the Boise River, and so it's just a different culture. And about 60% of everybody that we've met in the last 2 years are from California, so it's we're a bunch of transplants up here, and so that's a good thing because I really like California, and I miss my friends and that's why I come back. So,
and so, what larger town are you close to?
Boise.
You're close to Boise. Okay.
Yeah, and 10 minutes away.
And what's the weather like?
The weather is really nice. We live in the Treasure Valley, which is kind of its own little microclimate. So when the weather is relatively foul everywhere else in Idaho, it stays relatively mild. And so we're really lucky about that. And if it snows, it doesn't stick around for more than a few days before it melts. So we're happy.
Fantastic. So you grew up in Burbank, and you were educated here in California. We're at Cal State Northridge. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I grew up in Burbank and Carpinteria all my life. Got my master's degree at Cal State Northridge and furthered my studies at Art Center in Pasadena. And, Carpinteria has been my home, and, I still have family there. So, and I'll always come back.
And so you actually, moved here 20 plus years ago, you were teaching art at the Santa Barbara City College. And
art for 30 years there, continuing education.
Yeah. So, okay, so I'm going to ask you a question. Michael Drury was on our show, and he was a teacher at City College for years.
Yes.
And I asked him, Michael, what's your big contribution to art, a scholarship? You know, what one thing did you teach your students that, you know, what you feel might resonate throughout their career as artists? And he said, stop before you paint the brown potato in the sky.
Well, that's a deep one. The brown potato in the sky. Okay. Well,
I think he meant
referring to my future as a spud head in Idaho, but
no. What he was talking about was working in oils. A new student, a new student will mix their oils to the point that you, instead of having clouds in a blue sky, you have a brown beige potato.
Yeah.
And so he was saying, stop before you mix your oils to the extent that you get mud, you know.
Yes, this is true. Well, yes, that's exactly right. You want to have discretion. You want to have a discriminating eye, because color is subtractive. The more you mix color, it loses its intensity. So you can over mix it so it does turn to mud. And so that's, you know, he works mostly with a very pure, clean color. But if a tonalist is painting, they do want a little bit of mud, and then they can revive it with more pure color. So it's a little complicated, but the whole tonalist movement that started in California in the 1920s was developed by mixing complementary colors to achieve a gray tone, but not to a mud tone. There's a difference between grays and muds. So. And they knew how exactly to get that, achieve that, that effect.
So interestingly enough, you know, you're talking about the 20s, you've got the Carl Oscar Borg and Colin
Campbell
and Ray Strong and those guys, you know, and they're, you know, Richard, let's go to a quick break, because I want to talk a little bit more with Thomas about his nocturnes. I have seen many night studies that he's done throughout town, in private collections. I want to know how he came to specialize in, or one of his specialties in nocturnes. And and then Emily, help me as well, as far as if you've got any questions for Thomas, I'd love to hear from you. Let's go to a quick break. And I'm celebrating today Coastal Moments, plein air paintings by local Santa Barbara artists. The private reception and the opening is Thursday, June 13th. At 4:30 at the Santa Barbara Maritime Museum. It's a show not to be missed. We'll go through the lineup of artists again, but we're speaking specifically today with Greg Gorga, the director of the museum, and Emily Falk, the curator of the show and head curator at the museum, and a favorite artist, Thomas Van Stein. Don't turn that dial back in a minute.
Thank you. night turned cold, and the stars look down, and you hug yourself on the cold, cold ground. You wake the morning in a stranger's coat. No one would just see.
Welcome back, and I'm celebrating Santa Barbara Maritime Museum's Coastal Moments, plein air paintings by local Santa Barbara artists. A show that's opening at the Maritime Museum Thursday, June 13th. And to help me, I'm joined by Greg Gorga, the director of the museum, and also Emily Falk, who hung the show, the curator at the museum, and Thomas Van Stein, who I find out is living outside of Boise, Idaho, the main part of the year. He's been a painter here in Santa Barbara and Carpinteria all his life. And it turns out that he's found a community of Californians in Idaho who are there because it's kind of expensive to live in Santa Barbara. But he does come back every so often, and he's enjoying his time. And are you painting in Idaho?
Oh.
And if
oh,
so,
yeah.
Have you changed your style at all?
No, I haven't changed my style at all. I've just been changing the subject matter, mostly because I'm surrounded by mountains and streams and beautiful changes of color with the seasons. So that's just the difference in subject matter, but my style and my approach is still the same.
And do you have representation there?
No, in fact, I'm on my way back from Jackson Hole right now, where I visited six galleries and gave them my work to consider for representation in Jackson Hole. So I'm working on expanding into this region, but I'm keeping my foothold in Santa Barbara.
Right. Right. Okay. So the question for you is about the nocturnes. And
yes.
I read on your website that in the early 2000s, you had a solo exhibition of Moonlight Nocturnes at Edinger Gallery in New York City.
Yes.
And then you showed further here. And then you also showed at Carnegie Art Museum in Oxnard, and the Carnegie Museum gave you an award for your urban nocturnes.
Yes.
How did this happen? How did you discover nocturnes, specifically urban?
Okay, well, I want to credit Arturo Teo for entertaining the whole concept of painting at night on location when we were together with the Oak Leaf artists out on Santa Cruz Island back in 1987. And that started the whole thing. I wound up having a solo exhibition at the Gallery 113 downtown with my nocturne paintings. And through that, I wound up meeting Gary Breitweiser, who came and saw my show, enjoyed it, and allowed me to come to see his collection of 85 Charles Willow Peter paintings. He pulled every single one of them out so I could see the Peter's collection. And he just inspired me to continue to reach deeper into the nocturnal plein air paintings. And then in the late 90s, I went back to school and did my whole master's thesis in the urban nocturnes, because I couldn't paint pretty picture nocturnes to meet the university criteria. So I spent 2 years painting outside in environments that people wouldn't normally want to go at night because of it's a little dangerous, but my paintings needed to have that edge. And then from there, I wound up meeting a collector who introduced me to the gallery owners in New York City at the Eleanor Edinger Gallery in Soho. And they gave me my first solo exhibition in New York there, but not with the urban nocturnes, but with the moonlight nocturnes, because for them it was more sellable than urban nocturnes. So, and then from that, I entered into an open juried competition at the Carnegie Art Museum in Oxnard, and I won the event with one of my urban nocturnes. So, and that gave me my first solo museum exhibition as a result of winning that competition. And so it just kept continuing. I kept winning awards through the nocturne paintings. I had an 18-page article written in the American Artists workshops, a magazine about the nocturnal painting. And what can I say? It just has continued, and now, yeah.
So I want to come back to you and ask you a little bit about your wine label career.
But I
would like to ask Emily, as she mentioned at the beginning of the show, that what she was looking for in her selection of artists is diversity of vision.
Yes.
Diversity of vision. So Emily, tell me, the various artists that you've chosen. All right, let's start with Anne Shelton Beth. What kind of vision does she bring?
Anne is very interesting. She sort of goes between a meditative stillness to a dynamic element in her paintings. She lived in the Midwest, so she has these really vast clouds and big skies that sort of came with her from moving from there. And then she zones in on the ocean here, but you might see parts of the painting very still and then parts of the painting moving. It's very, very interesting. She's a terrific painter.
What about Nancy Davidson?
Nancy's a wonderful painter, born and raised here, and really pays attention to the changing weather of the coast. So the one painting she has in the show is a storm is coming in on a sunny cliff in Santa Barbara. So you get the feeling of the warm apricot tones and then this pending storm. So she likes to show the chaos of the kind of the weather elements against the coast. And she did that really well in that one painting. And she's a terrific artist too.
And okay, so let's move on to another artist here, Camille Deller.
Camille is also born and raised in Santa Barbara up in the foothills. She's very meditative too. She sort of captures these quick moments. The one painting in the show is very abstract. You see stratas of colors of sort of peach warmth over the horizon, and then the blues and greens of the ocean and the sky. And it's very kind of unusual for her work, but she's a very quiet, sort of meditative person, and it really comes out in that particular piece.
And you know, there's a wonderful quote from Deputy Director Jessica Tade. She says in your press release, it says, "Plein air painters capture moments that can never be repeated. Especially in Santa Barbara, we have unique landscapes that are beautifully interpreted." And I think that's really interesting that they can, you know, that's the philosophy, they can never be repeated. Let's move on. Rick Garcia, I love his work, and he is always my favorite when he's hanging at the Natural History Museum. Tell me about Rick's vision.
He's very different than the others. He does, his paintings in the show are more rocks. He comes from a sort of biology background and realist painting. So he has rocky scapes. He also he does a lot of succulents. Those aren't in the show. But his work is quite different than everybody else. And it's very, very realist, but very sort of dry, almost like dry landscape. It's just quite.
Okay. All right. Derek Harrison. I actually visited his studio not too long ago. Amazing painter.
Oh my goodness. Yes. He's fabulous. He does the plein air and goes out and he goes out to the landscape and he captures that. But then he paints, he does a lot of portrait painting and he paints his subjects in the studio and then he poses them into the painting. So you get this juxtaposition of the people painted in the studio into the landscape as though they are having that moment that he experienced. So it's quite interesting. He's also a realist painter.
You know, I was actually a client of mine wanted to commission a portrait of his family, but in landscape. And I thought of Derek and went to visit. And, you know, he's absolutely so facile. I get the word facile. He can do both the landscapes and the figurative work.
Yes.
And be beautifully done. Willis Heaton.
What did you say?
Willis Heaton, tell me about the vision.
Willis is wonderful. He just seems to capture light, moment, time, everything. His paintings feel very fast. Like he just gets them painted. There's actually one behind Greg right there on the screen. That's Pira Dana Pine, I think. And he's very fluid and just captures nature like fleeting nature. I can't quite explain it. Wonderful colors.
Ray Hunter.
Ray does reflective watercolors, mainly water, boat scenes along the coast, a lot of blues, a lot of reflections. He's a wonderful watercolor, he's very articulate. And I actually just got them in and saw them live, and I have not seen them live. I'd seen screenshots of them. They're very, very beautifully done.
So let's see, did we do Ann Sanders?
No, Anne is terrific. She's actually from Belgium originally. She was a student here, was in the sciences and became a painter. I think she studied with you, Thomas, didn't she?
Yes, she did.
Yeah,
yes, she did.
Big fan of Thomas. She's a wonderful painter, actually. Thomas can chime in on those.
Oh, yeah.
She spends most of her time out on the location painting. Like a lot of artists spend some time and bring it back to the studio. She probably spends the majority of the time painting actually on the location, really taking it in for the duration of the painting. And again, stunning, stunning colors of the landscapes or shapes. You see that she works with shapes, and just a lovely person to work with.
Ralph Waterhouse.
Well, Ralph, wonderful Ralph. He's been painting for 50 years, has two galleries. Real classic Santa Barbara painter, loves where he lives, really shows that in his paintings. He has three real beauties in the show of Butterfly Beach and cliffs and the shore. I think I can't remember what the names are exactly. And, you know, he's just a real iconic Santa Barbara painter.
You know, I have to tell you a quick story about Ralph Waterhouse. A client of mine wanted to donate a work that Ralph did, a quite large, almost 5-6 feet. I think it was a vertical painting of a eucalyptus grove. And so where do you want to donate this? And of course, he wanted a tax deduction for the donation. So he said, I'd like to donate to the Santa Barbara Club. And so we did, and they hung it. I don't know if you're familiar with the club, but there's a room with a grand piano and big fireplace. And they hung it in back of where the grand piano is, and it's in between two large, you know, classical windows. And it is so beautiful there, absolutely beautiful. And the first thing you see this just stately grand piano and the fire going. And then there's, you know, Ralph's picture, the painting. Oh, it's just fantastic. And very quickly, just to put you on the spot, Emily, and then I'd like Greg to weigh in too, and then we'll go to quick break. Describe the vision of Thomas Van Stein.
Oh, my gosh. I actually want to talk more to Thomas. I just love the nocturnal paintings. The work that all the paintings that are in the show, there's three, have the pilgrims coming in to port in two of them, and then Little Toot. So he's got the iconic boats, but there's a mystery. And I think you said it earlier, that edge, Thomas, there's an edge. And he's the only painter in the show that I feel has an edge, which I love.
Greg, how about you?
Well, I loved Thomas's work too, and I'm just getting new to him. But, you know, first of all, he paints the Pilgrim, which is, you know, the replica of the Dana ship. So it ties into the Maritime Museum so well. We do education programming all about Richard Henry Dana, and 2 years before the mast, the book that he wrote, we put kids on tall ships to do that program. So it's great to have that image in the show. Unfortunately, that ship sank during COVID. But it's a rare piece of it. And then, you know, Little Two, which he painted as well, sits right in front of our front door. And, you know, it's a big move for Thomas, I think, to go to Idaho, because I'm looking at his logo, which has an anchor in it, right? Yeah. It's part of your logo. So he's very connected to our ocean.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I want to know more about Pilgrim sinking. My gosh, when we get back from the break, Greg, I'd like to hear a quick story about that, if it's okay.
Sure.
Okay. Richard, let's go to quick break, and then we'll hear a little bit more. We're celebrating Coastal Moments, plein air paintings by local Santa Barbara artists, opening at the Santa Barbara Maritime Museum June 13th. And at 4:30, that's the reception. And then the show is open So yeah, absolutely. It's running through August the 18th, by the way. And you can learn more at sbmm.org. And then we talked a little bit about many of the painters that are hanging there, featured artists. And I want to hear about Thomas painting Pilgrim, which sank during COVID. Wow. Okay, Richard, let's go to a quick break.
And we'll roll the old chariot along. We'll roll the old chariot along. We'll roll the old chariot along. And we'll all hang on behind. And we'll roll the old chariot along. We'll roll the old chariot along. We'll roll the old chariot along. And we'll all hang on behind.
Oh, we'd be all right if the wind were in our sails.
We'd be all right if the wind were in our sails. We'd be all right if the wind were in our sails.
Welcome back. It's Elizabeth Stewart, and I'm celebrating Coastal Moments, Plain Air Paintings by local Santa Barbara artists. It's opening 13th at the Santa Barbara Maritime Museum. And Emily has got a great quote in talking about the show. And we were talking about her quest to bring to the show artists that offered really varying perceptions of plein air paintings in general, but specifically the ocean. And she's saying, you know, this is echoed in the diversity of painters that she's chosen, but also she talks about the ocean. She says the ocean has had a long and complex and varied connotation for artists. For some, it represents an ever-present sort of tranquility. For others, the sea is turbulent and fierce, which symbolizes change or destruction. And for many, it's a combination of the two. The exhibiting artist's works are meditations on the ocean as an affirmation of both human and environmental. And of course, Thomas Van Stein is speaking of the fierceness of the ocean. Thomas Van Stein has done a wonderful painting called The Pilgrim in Port, which made Greg smile. And I asked Greg about the Pilgrim and the reference to the Pilgrim in regards to the Maritime Museum. So tell us, Greg, why did you chuckle then?
Well, first let me say that Emily is just such an amazing curator. You know, we brought her here to the museum in 2010. I don't make a lot of good decisions, but that one was a great one. And she came to the museum around. As she liked to say, it was an old man's museum before she got here. She added a very great artistic touch to everything that we do, not just our art exhibits, but all of our exhibits. The Pilgrim is a replica of the ship that Dana journeyed to California on from New England in the 1830s. It was a hides and tallow ship that was built, I think, locally, in a replica of that ship from the 1830s. It was built in Orange County. And you know, to celebrate that Richard Henry Dana story at the Ocean Institute in Dana Point. And unfortunately, after the COVID set in March 2020, all the staff went home and nobody was really paying close attention to the ship, and it sank at the dock and was not salvaged. It was so the Ocean Institute lost one of the two ships. The painting of the Spirit of Dana Point is in this exhibit, as well as the Pilgrim by a different artist. And that is the ship that's still remaining. And we started bringing Spirit of Dana Point up from the Ocean Institute in 2001 for overnight education programming. We now use the Mystic Whaler for that programming. It's a daytime program, but getting tips, kids on ships is what we're all about here at the Maritime Museum, and important education. And it's great to have images of the Pilgrim and the Spirit of Dana Point in this exhibit, because that really exemplifies our education programming.
So the Pilgrims just sank? Did they just, I mean, how did that happen?
Well, it had a bilge pump was going on it, so it had some kind of small leak, but I think it must have gotten worse and they didn't realize it. I don't know the details, but it took on water, way too much for the bilge pump to handle. And it just sank right there at the dock.
Oh my heavens!
Very sad. It was not a nobody in the maritime world was very happy about losing that ship because it meant a lot, and you know it exemplified. You know, that book Richard Henry Dana wrote about his experience. He was 2 years on that ship, but he left that ship to get another one to ride back to New England. But that book was an instant bestseller. It's never been out of print. In fact, Melville corresponded with Richard Henry Dana when he was writing Moby Dick. And it's especially pertinent to Santa Barbara because Dana's first stop on the Pilgrim was here in Santa Barbara. And it was right after a major fire. He was not very impressed with Santa Barbara. It was desolate, dusty, charred. And they also had to anchor 3 miles off and row in and back and forth with all those hides and tallow. So it was not his favorite stop in along the California, Alta California coastline. But the book is an amazing experience. We get kids to read an abridged version, fourth graders studying their California history. And then they do a tour of the museum, see our exhibit on Dana, and then do that education program. So it's an amazing experience for these kids, very hands-on, project-based, very good for kids with learning challenges, language challenges, because it's all hands-on experiential learning, which is, we have 13 different education programs, and we really strive for project-based experiential learning from our Maritime on the Move program, Marine Science, Girls in Ocean Science, Whales Are Superheroes, all, and then the Tall Ship program that we use. Now the Mystic Whaler, thanks to Roger and Sarah Christman. So we have a new tall ship that we bring here to the Santa Barbara Harbor every October and April now.
What did you say about superheroes and whales?
So one of Emily's new permanent exhibits, it's been up for a few years, is called Whales Are Superheroes. And kid, it's very kid-friendly. She did an amazing job making it very like comic book looking. We worked with Holly Loheis, who's an education consultant for us. She's dove all over the world with Jean-Michel Cousteau. And it talks about whales are big animals. They eat a lot. They poop a lot. And that poop gets eaten by phytoplankton and krill. And eventually through photosynthesis converts CO2 to oxygen. So what we'd like to teach our young kids, and we go in the classroom and do this education program, and then you can come to the museum and see the exhibit, is that we need to take care of our oceans because, and I didn't even know this, our oceans actually provide more oxygen on our planet than our trees. So we teach the kids every other breath you take is thanks to our oceans. So we need to take care of the oceans, keep plastics out of it and all that. So it's a wonderful, wonderful exhibit and a great education program.
Just makes me think that Emily's got to wear so many hats there. Because not only is she has to artistically, you know, mount such exhibits, but she's got to go into the science behind them to present them properly.
Well, you have no idea. One time she was deputy director of education and curator and director of exhibits. Now she just concentrates on the curator and director of exhibits, but it's still a lot of work. She has to do a lot of research for every exhibit she does.
That's so interesting. You know, Richard, I'd like to go to quick break, but I want to hear about Crosshatch Wines. This is a recent development in Thomas's life. Thomas Van Steiner is our featured artist of the day. And in 2021 and two, he started to make the brand Crosshatch Wines wine labels. And in 2023, Edible Magazine awarded him with Wine Label Illustration of the Year. And I want to find out what that looks like. How cool is that? Do you drink wine, Thomas?
Just a little.
Okay.
just
Let's go
a
to
little.
Quick break. And then I want to hear about the wine label, what you pictured on that label when we get back from the break. Don't turn that down. Okay. Back in a minute.
It's hard to say it. Probably me. Whoa, it's probably me.
Thank you.
Welcome back. It's Elizabeth Stewart. And Richard, while I have you, can you hear me, Richard? No. Okay. So, Greg, I have to jump from the show a little early, and you were kind enough to say you'd take over for me. So I just want to really quickly, Thomas, to hear about the wine labels. What illustration did you make?
I've made a number of them. Ryan Carr and Jessica Carr, they started this new line of blending wines together. And the artist's term, cross-hatching, is a technique using pen and ink. And so they contacted me and asked me to do a wine label for them. And that was probably about 7-8 years ago. And since then, we've done maybe 10 different wine labels using the cross-hatch technique for the wine labels. And the last wine label I did for them was of two oak barrels. I drew on location in their winery and finished it, of course, in my studio. But it's two wine labels or two wine barrels, nicely lit and all done in the crosshatch technique. And that's the one that won the illustration of the year for wine labels in 2023.
What are you doing more?
Yes, they have sold the wine company, the crosshatch, to another lady named Elizabeth. And so she has contacted me to continue creating the line for the crosshatch brand. So very happy.
Fantastic. Yeah. Greg, yes. Do you have any questions for Thomas?
Sure. So, Thomas. So is crosshatch a style of artwork?
Yes, it is. It's basically you're using pen and ink. So the subject matter is in black and white, and you achieve the values or the tones of shading through the proximity of each stroke with the pen in parallel lines. And every time you cross a pen and a drawing, every time you cross a line, it gets darker. So in other words, the more crossings you get vertically, horizontally, and diagonally, the darker it will get. So you're working kind of light to dark. You know, your darkest darks have the closest together lines that are parallel or vertical, horizontal, and diagonal. And your lightest ones, the lines are farther apart, and so the white of the paper comes through. So yeah. So if you just look at a dollar bill, you can see very fine crosshatch lines. It's like the etching process as well. That's how you etch. It's the same techniques for etching as far as achieving values and dimension to a picture.
Wow. So I have to relate everything to maritime. Was that a process they would have used for a scrimshaw?
Absolutely. The same thing. Yeah. So it's basically learning to control the lines. So you're getting a volume and volume to your pictures.
Wow. Yeah, Emily did another great exhibit. Oh, gosh, how long ago was that, Emily? Of scrimshaw and tattoos, right?
Yes.
And nice. The history of that is amazing.
Yes.
And you know, sailors had a lot of free time on their hand, and unfortunately they had bones a lot of time, marine mammals, and to do scrimshaw on. And it's the detail work on those is just incredible.
Yeah.
Some of them are so tiny.
And sperm whales' teeth.
That's right. Yes, exactly. Which I think they're starting to make a comeback, sperm whales. And we're really proud at the Maritime Museum, speaking of whales, that we worked with Holly Lohais, who I mentioned earlier, and Hiroko Banco, who owns the Condor Express, to make the Santa Barbara Channel a whale heritage area. Only the 9th in the world and only the 2nd in the United States. And so it's all about seeing whales in their natural habitat in a safe way with safe ecotourism. So the Maritime Museum is really proud to be a part of that, and why we did the whales and super real exhibit as well. Richard, should we take a break? We're Well, let's go one more. Emily, so the show's coming up soon. Tell me, so you really change the colors of your walls all the time for these exhibits. So what's the idea about that? What's the reason for that? Why do you do that for each show?
Well, every show is so different, so you really can't put certain artwork on old colored walls that it doesn't work on. The walls really need to complement the art, because really, really good shows, if the walls aren't done right, the signage isn't done right, it can make the biggest difference on how the artwork looks. So you really want to pay attention to the whole installation. So I look at the artist's work, I see what will complement the work the walls are going to be. There's about four different colors going on in this next one. And it's, you know, Greg, you've seen it. It makes a huge difference on how Thomas actually commented on what color might work on his. And I already had planned on that. It's a slightly different shade of what's there now. But it, so I've already got that all lined out, ready to go. And you know, I owe it to the artist to make their work look the best.
Yeah, wonderful. The artists always love the way you hang your show. All right, we'll be right back. You're listening to 1290 AM, Elizabeth Stewart. We'll be back in a second.
Oh, a night on the town wouldn't do us any harm.
A night on the town wouldn't do us any harm. A night on the town wouldn't do us any harm. And we'll all hang on behind.
Welcome back to the Elizabeth Stewart Show at 1290 AM. We're here with Thomas Van Stein, artist that's going to be featured in Coastal Moments and the curator of the Sandbar Maritime Museum, Emily Falk. My name is Greg Gorga, Executive Director of the Sandbar Maritime Museum. And Emily, this show, the pieces are going to be for sale. Can you tell us about how many pieces there are from these 10 different artists and the process for purchasing a piece of artwork?
There are 53 pieces of artwork for sale. You need to purchase it through the museum. Come see the artwork or send somebody down if you've seen the pieces and to purchase artwork. They ring up the sale here at the museum. You cannot pick up the artwork until the show has closed, which is the 18th of August. You can pick it up the 19th through the 23rd. And I already have three pieces that people have put dots on before the pieces are on the wall. So I have a funny feeling.
Congratulations.
Hopeful feeling that these are going to sell. And yes, we really want to get people into the museum. We don't have an online access to purchase the works. We will connect our brochure onto our website where you can at least view the pieces. You can call in a purchase. But I really hope that most people will come in and actually see the exhibit and purchase at that point.
And not only are you supporting local artists by purchasing artwork here at the Maritime Museum, but you're also supporting the Maritime Museum. So it's a two-for-one win. So that's great. And Emily, we're going to have a children's activity with all of our future exhibits. But for this one, can you talk about what's going to happen in our children's gallery?
Yeah. So we're launching a new children's art project with each exhibit. And as Thomas said earlier, it starts very young with children, the interest in art. I know that I was 5 years old in kindergarten when I was really drawing like crazy. So it's an important, really important. So we're going to have an art activity on plein air painting in our kids' area where they'll work with pastels, color pencils, crayons, and a minimal line drawing that we've created. Do their stratas of color and their light. They can put objects, you know, we have some little stencils if they want to stencil in a boat or they can draw a boat. And that will be up for the duration of the show. So it gives kids the ability to sort of see what's going on. They can, the signage in the area will say to go upstairs and look at the paintings and come back down and draw. And I think it's a wonderful way to start getting them interested in the exhibits we have and how they can actually be those artists someday.
Nice.
Yeah, no kidding. And they get to take a piece of artwork home with them as well, right? Yeah. And before we go, I just want to mention the Sandbar Maritime Museum, Santa Barbara Harbor, 113 Harbor Way. We also opened up dark coffee at SB Maritime Museum. So you can come visit the museum, get some pastries, a great cup of coffee, and you can actually bring your coffee in to the museum when we come in here, when you visit us. And we're open 7 days a week, as is dark coffee. We are open from 10 to 5 every day. You want to get here early. The show opens on June 13th because those pieces will sell. So if you want a piece to purchase, and it runs through August 18th. Thomas, thank you very much. Emily, thank you. We hope to see you back here at the Maritime Museum. You are listening to 1290 AM, Elizabeth Stewart. Thank you very much. We'll see you next week.